Many years ago, Greta and I spent a season working at a retreat center in a remote part of the wilderness in the western United States. It's a stunning place in Washington State, far from any other town. To reach it, you have to take an hour-long boat ride down a lake and then an hour and a half bus ride up a winding dirt track that skirts these towering cliffs on one side. It feels like an accomplishment just to get there. The center is really an experiment in Christian community. People come for varying lengths of time, as guests for a week or two, or as volunteers or staff for much longer. Greta and I were there for a few months. Others might stay for a couple of years, helping tend to various aspects of the community's life, working in the kitchen or the chapel or the office. It was the off-season when we were there, autumn into the start of winter. There weren't all that many guests coming and going, and a close and quite special sense of community developed among all of us out there in the woods. We came from different backgrounds and places. We had different gifts and experiences. And living together in that remote place, sharing meals and worship and hikes in the backcountry, distinctions around age or education or status or other sorts of things tended to disappear. It felt like we were all part of this common project, all there on the same level. Until the rock star arrived. And I do mean a literal rock star. He's not a household name, but in some circles he was very well known at that time. And he signed up to spend a week at the center in between albums and international tours. It is hard for me to overstate the effect that this one person's presence had on our little wilderness community. Everybody played it cool at first, like it was no big deal. He's just another guest, right? We'll all just act normal. But by dinner on his first night there, it was clear things were different. There was this new buzz in the room when he entered, and a curiosity about where he would sit. Some brave and outgoing types took places around him, and those of us still trying to just play it cool silently grumped from across the room. The week went on like this. It seemed that all the talk was about this person, how he was spending his time, who he was hanging out with, who seemed to be forming bonds with him. And I'm not proud to say I was far from immune to this myself. I could feel it too. The wish to be close to this person who spent his life on stage and who so many people admired. What if he started sitting with me at meals? Wouldn't that be a story to tell people back home? I should add that this rock star, from all I could tell, was actually a very down-to-earth and humble person. He was not actively courting this rabid attention. It was just the effect his presence had on all of us. Our little community was very different that week. Anxious, shifty, not nearly so relaxed and present to one another as we had been just a few days before. I had not thought of that experience in a long time, but our gospel reading this morning actually brought it back for me. Jesus and his disciples are on the road, making their way toward Jerusalem when James and John sidle up next to Jesus, presumably out of hearing of the other disciples. "Teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask of you," they say. Parents out there might have heard some version of that request at one point or another, and we all know not to fall for it. So Jesus says what any parent would say in response. "Well, just what is it that you want me to do for you? Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory," they say. Now, I don't know about you, but I've heard this story many times, and I am accustomed to coming down hard on these boneheaded disciples who still don't get it. They've been following Jesus for some time by now, months at least, perhaps years. They have seen how he spends his time, healing, feeding, teaching, casting out demons. They have seen who he spends his time with, those who are sick or hungry or forgotten or trampled by society. They've seen the values that he keeps pointing to: generosity, inclusion, justice, mercy. They've even heard several times, in fact, including just before this encounter, that Jesus is not headed for any conventional victory, clobbering enemies and taking charge. No, instead, he will soon face a violent death at the hands of the powerful. When James and John shuffle up to Jesus and ask to sit at his right and left in his glory, I have heard their question is motivated by a desire for power and authority, sort of a play to get choice cabinet seats in Jesus' heavenly government, which is pretty darn boneheaded, to say the least. It should be abundantly clear to these two by now that the kingdom Jesus keeps pointing to has no place for that coercive power over others. But what if it's not exactly power that James and John are looking for? What if instead they are hoping for a kind of exclusive intimacy with Jesus, hoping to be part of the in crowd? Heidi Heverkamp, an author and Episcopal priest, asks that question of this passage, and I find it opens this familiar story up for me in a new way. There's no way to know, of course. Maybe James and John really are picturing themselves sitting on miniature thrones next to Jesus' big one, meeting out divine justice for all eternity. But maybe instead their motivation is a bit more common, and to me at least, a bit more familiar. The wish simply to be in the inner ring. C.S. Lewis used that term in an address he gave to a group of university students 80 years ago. There are inner rings everywhere, he said, in schools, in workplaces, in professions, and the wish to find our way into one or more of those rings is one of the deepest and most basic human desires. Those people really have it made, we imagine from the outside. Those people are really in the know. Those people truly belong. And that's where I want to be. It's a familiar story, isn't it? It is the cool kids' table in the lunchroom, or the folks sitting with the rock star at the retreat center, or the senior staff who snicker over inside jokes that the new hires don't understand, or the established scholars who scoff together at the contributions of younger ones. Sadly, it's a familiar story in churches, too. It's the lifelong members who know how things are done, ignoring the gifts and contributions of those who are new. It's the familiar discussion-ending phrase, "We have never done it that way before." We can spend much of our lives concerned with inner rings of one sort or another, either maintaining our place in one or trying to work our way into another. It is activity that's motivated by the wish to belong, yes, but even more by the satisfaction of being included while others are left out. There'd be no fun if there were no outsiders, Lewis says of all inner rings. The invisible line would have no meaning unless most people were on the wrong side of it. Exclusion is no accident. It is the essence. I would add that it's, of course, often women or other marginalized groups who are those excluded. And Jesus, this one who spent his time with common, unremarkable, often overlooked folks, will have none of it. The disciples hear about James and John's request to sit at this special table up front with Jesus, and they are undoubtedly a little irked. So Jesus calls them all together and expresses in yet one more way what life in his company looks like. Roman rulers live as tyrants, he says, but it is not so among you. For you, life is not about climbing higher and lording over. For you, it is about service. It is about caring for others and ensuring that no one is left out. Now hold on a minute, you might be saying. Aren't the disciples all kind of an inner ring? Aren't they just the sort of exclusive group Jesus seems to be arguing against? I don't think so. Yes, they're certainly his closest companions, and he spends lots of his time with them. But their group certainly does not exist to exclude. He is always pointing them beyond themselves, and there's always room for more at Jesus' table. In the passage shortly before this one, Jesus invites a man to sell all his possessions, give the money to the poor, and follow him. "Come on," he says, "join the crew." Sure, the way isn't easy, but the door is always open. So Jesus has no time for this basic dynamic of human life, the wish to be in while others are out. Stop maintaining exclusionary groups, and stop striving to weasel your way into them. It's a hard statement, a difficult and very countercultural demand. But as is so often the case with Jesus, it is also a gracious invitation. It's an invitation to a life that is beyond us and them, beyond more important and less important, beyond anxious striving and fussy maintaining. It is an invitation into a life of honest work, an appreciation for those around us, and a deeper and more durable satisfaction that is not based on leaving others out. The alternative Jesus gives is a life of openness, where instead of looking at others as rivals, we see them as companions on the road, as people we might care for, as neighbors we might serve. He offers an invitation into a far better way. And that, in the end, is a great gift. So the rock star finished his week's stay, and things did return to normal. The buzz died down. The conversations returned to other things, the work that was before us, and the coming snowfall, and the well-being of the community and the business of daily life. And I, at least, found it a great relief to sense that other way coming back, where we were not all jostling to be at some elusive center, but we're just glad to be in this together. We have glimpsed that way in Jesus. It is the welcome that extends to everyone. It is the water that washes over us, proclaiming us all beloved. It is the bread and wine that don't run out, and the table where there is always room for more. We have seen that better way. We have felt it. We have tasted it. And it is our calling to go and live it wherever we are, in our homes and our workplaces and our schools and our neighborhoods and right here in our congregation. Jesus has shown us the way, this glorious one who shares our human life, this powerful one who bends to us in weakness. He has shown us that open-hearted serving is where life truly is. And so, friends, we follow. Amen.